just wanna take a little time out. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. It was a success, and we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Tumation needs a TTTT. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Unless otherwise noted, the Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday at 4:30 p.m.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K20HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 11 o'clock, and coming up next is the Digital Divide.
I'm talking today with Joel Moskowitz, PhD. He is the director for the Center of Family and Community Health, School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley. He's a postdoctoral fellow, evaluation, research, and methodology at Northwestern University, a PhD in social psychology from UC Santa Barbara, and many more accolades. Joel Moskowitz, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Thank you.
Today we're going to be talking about EMFs. So Joel, help our listeners understand why cell phones and cell phone towers are dangerous. We'll start with a big question.
Well, cell phones, cell towers, wireless devices, Wi-Fi, cordless phones, wearable wireless devices, wireless smart meters, there's a whole host of technology that rely on electromagnetic fields, or EMF, more specifically, two types of non-ionizing electromagnetic fields, extremely low frequency or magnetic fields that typically come from power lines, but also could come from the systems that operate your mobile phone or laptop, and radio frequency fields. Radio frequency fields are emitted by these devices to communicate with other infrastructure and essentially to give you access to telecommunications networks or the internet. And we have research going back many decades indicating that both forms of energy, extremely low frequency fields as well as radio frequency fields, are potentially carcinogenic, according to the International Agency for Research on Cancer. More recent research suggests that they are actually carcinogenic. They are cancer-producing. And it takes a while for the policy-making bodies to catch up with the large body of research, which predominantly shows the preponderance of the research that's published in peer-reviewed journals shows that this form of energy, these two forms of energy, extremely low frequency and radio frequency fields, are indeed carcinogenic and have other adverse effects on humans as well as other species.
And one of those adverse effects that we're seeing in really high volumes are brain tumors in the location frequently where people hold their phones. Is that true?
It varies from country to country in terms of the brain tumor incidence. What we are seeing in studies that have looked specifically at the types of and locations of brain tumors is that there has been an increase in tumors in the frontal and temporal lobe, which would receive the maximum radiation, at least from earlier cell phones, if not the smartphones, and particularly the most serious type of brain tumor, glioblastoma multiforme, which is highly fatal. Those have been increasing in studies that have looked at tumor registry data in depth. Overall in the U.S., it seems that glioma or brain cancer has been fairly flat over time. Meningioma, a cancer of the outer lining of the brain, has increased substantially, which may be related to cell phone use. Increasingly, too, we're seeing, beginning to see in studies, evidence of other head and neck tumors, which are likely related to smartphone use, because the location of the antennas in the smartphone and the form factor for the smartphone is very different than the early cell phones, the flip phones or the candy bar phones. So we're beginning to see tumors of the thyroid gland and the parotid gland, and I've been hearing cases of incidences of lymphoma in the neck, which may be smartphone related.
Is that due to placement and position when people are using the device?
It definitely seems to be the case, yes. People who use their devices hands-free or with wired headsets seem to be at much less risk of head and neck tumors. The other major problem, in which we have a substantial amount of research, is evidence of sperm damage in males who keep cell phones in their front pockets. And there's quite a bit of research establishing that risk. There's less research suggesting, but suggestive, that women are also at risk of infertility, higher miscarriage rates for women who are exposed during pregnancy or prior to pregnancy to high levels of magnetic fields, some of which may come from these wireless devices such as cell phones or laptops.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Any of these devices, essentially, it sounds like what you're saying is they all emit some amount of radiation.
That's very true. They emit, virtually all of these devices emit not only radio frequency radiation, but extremely low frequency magnetic fields.
One thing I'm thinking of is all the different places and ways that people can be exposed besides their cell phone. So, like wearable wireless devices.
Yeah,
do they
Wi-Fi
count?
Wi-Fi router. Yeah, I mean, basically we're bathed in what some people have called electrosmog. And the levels of electrosmog have increased incredibly over time. We did a study, part of an international study. We contributed a site in Los Angeles, multiple sites in Los Angeles, to an international study that was recently published. And we found that the levels in Los Angeles, and these were outdoor levels, of radio frequency radiation had increased about 70-fold over several decades.
Wow.
The last study, which was conducted by the Environmental Protection Agency, was done. But our government has stopped monitoring these kinds of exposures. Other countries are continuing to monitor, but our government has been extremely negligent in addressing the health risks, in monitoring our exposures, in funding the research necessary to do to determine what might constitute safer exposures, and in setting policies that protect the public from chronic exposure to radio frequency.
That's been lacking for decades. That's not just the last 2 years.
No,
this
goes back decades.
Right.
We've been negligent in dealing with this environmental toxin.
Now, they do include, when you buy a cell phone, they all do come with, I'm going to call it the fine print, a tiny little folded piece of paper that has health warnings on it.
That's very true. Berkeley, California, actually has passed a law several years ago, 2015, which requires the cell phone retailers to post a small notice reminding people, consumers in the cell phone stores, to look at these fine print warnings about the minimum distance that you should keep the phone from your body and any other health risks that the cell phone manufacturers provide. But as soon as we passed that law in Berkeley, the industry represented by the industry trade group and lobbying group, the CTIA, sued the city, and that case has been going back and forth through the federal courts for the past 3 years.
Now, the information that Berkeley required to be posted, is it any different than the warnings that come inside the box with your phone?
It's a very simple notification indicating that you will exceed the federal guidelines if you don't pay attention to the manufacturer's minimum distance warnings. It doesn't even go into health warnings. It just basically says you're going to exceed the federal guidelines for exposure if you keep the phone next to your body.
And the manufacturer's lobbyists opposed that public notification.
Yeah, they don't want people to look at these fine print warnings, obviously, and they're spending, probably have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to get the city of Berkeley to rescind its ordinance. Prior to that, the city of San Francisco, city and county of San Francisco, had passed an ordinance that was a little more ambitious and actually discussed some health warnings, and that was battled by the CTIA in the federal courts for several years. But the city lost its will to fight the industry once the Mayor Gavin Newsom, who is now our incoming governor, left to become lieutenant governor. The city no longer had the will to battle the CTIA, so they rescinded their ordinance. And it was after that happened that the city of Berkeley took on this cause. So right now, Berkeley is the only city in the country that has an ordinance along these lines. Interestingly, the California Department of Public Health, beginning in 2009, tried to issue its own set of warnings about cell phone safety, and that got suppressed till last year when I won a successful lawsuit against the state of California that required the state to release the draft documents early in 2017. That received widespread media attention. Later that year, by the end of 2017, the state of California finally published its cell phone warnings, and those can now be downloaded from the California Department of Public Health's website.
It just sounds like the tobacco propaganda all over again. It's the same tactics, the same behavior, you know, trying to suppress simple, any hint that their product may cause adverse health effects, even though they acknowledge that they can. They don't want people to be thinking about it.
That's absolutely true. Most of my career I've spent conducting and publishing tobacco-related research, so I'm quite familiar with the tobacco industry's tactics and their playbook, and clearly the telecommunications industry is using the same playbook that's been used for tobacco and asbestos and a number of other toxic agents. It's, in fact, a much more powerful industry politically and economically than the tobacco industry ever was.
And why is that?
Basically, virtually everyone is dependent upon telecommunications, wireless telecommunications.
Yeah, and so more and
more. They basically made the whole country dependent on their technology. At its strongest, only about half of the public were tobacco smokers. And this is not just simply a national problem. This is a global problem, because wireless telecommunications is used by probably 5 billion people worldwide.
There are some countries that have said, well, we're not going to have wireless technology in schools. There are some countries that have acknowledged and created policy to protect children from wireless. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, a number of countries have published warnings, which typically don't get seen by much of the populace. And a few countries, particularly in the European Union, have restricted wireless use, particularly Wi-Fi and cell phone use, in schools like France and Belgium, notably, particularly in the younger grades. Increasingly, more and more schools are adopting policies to restrict the use of cell phones and, to some extent, the use of Wi-Fi in schools. Los Angeles Unified School District actually has adopted a policy that provides accommodations for people who develop sensitivity to wireless radiation. It may be the only school district in the country that it accommodates teachers and staff who have such sensitivities. But children still are at risk, and most schools' systems are oblivious to those kinds of risks when children become sensitive to electromagnetic fields. The kinds of symptoms that people who become sensitive to electromagnetic fields, which range from like headaches, insomnia, ringing of the ears, some people develop skin conditions, other people develop heart palpitations. There's a wide range of nonspecific symptoms for people who do develop a sensitivity to electromagnetic fields. By and large, the medical establishment in the U.S. particularly has not recognized this as a legitimate medical condition. So it's very difficult to find people to diagnose and treat this condition in the United States. European physicians are much more aware of this problem, and it's much easier to find diagnosis and treatment in other countries than the U.S., but we've been pretty much turned a blind eye to this phenomenon in our country.
Most recently, in fact, driving here today, heard a radio commercial touting your connected home with 5G, your car. Tell us a little bit about this emerging technology of 5G and its hazards.
Well, 5G represents, and it's not 5G Wi-Fi. People tend to confuse that. 5G Wi-Fi actually stands for 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, whereas the original Wi-Fi was being delivered at 4 gigahertz or 4 billion cycles per second. When people refer to 5G now, they mean the fifth generation of cellular technology.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to be the new great faster downloads and quicker latency, shorter latencies, which will enable all the devices in your home, your smart device, so-called smart devices, to communicate with each other and to communicate with you, and including autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles. Problems with 5G are manifold. Namely, it's going to add a whole new layer of electrosmog or different frequencies on top of existing frequencies that are being used by 2G, 3G, and 4G, which our cell phones and smartphones still are capable of emitting. So this is going to add a substantial amount of additional radio frequency radiation to our environment. Plus, 5G is going to use low band, mid band, and high band. These are frequencies that are either lower, somewhat higher, or very much higher than what we're currently using for Wi-Fi or cellular technology. The very high frequencies, the high band, are actually called millimeter waves because they're shorter wavelengths than being currently used for cellular or Wi-Fi. And these millimeter waves have particular properties that enable them to carry much more information because much more bandwidth will be available.
Mm.
But the downside of millimeter waves is that they don't travel very far, so that it's going to require what are called small cell antennas every few hundred yards in many cases. And these antennas, although they're small, they may still be put out a considerable amount of radiation. These antennas will be mounted much lower than conventional cell towers, or macro towers as they're called. They will be mounted on public utility poles, maybe 30, 40 feet above the ground. They'll be beaming directly into people's homes, and it's estimated by the industry that it's going to require somewhere between 800,000 and 2 million of these small cell antennas sites to be distributed across the country in the next several years in order to deploy 5G fully across the country. the research on the millimeter waves, and this is only one type of the additional radiation that will be used for 5G, suggests that they will primarily affect the skin, the eyes, the sweat glands, and the peripheral nervous system, because they don't penetrate as far as the lower frequency waves in terms of how much they penetrate the body. Although this technology is being touted as being more reliable, it comes with a number of problems, because the millimeter waves can't travel through trees or leaves. They're easily disrupted. And there's a fair amount of research actually on the millimeter waves, but most of it's very short-term, focusing on animal models, and shows a variety of effects that are deleterious. It will also interfere with other species, particularly insects and microbial organisms. And there's evidence that millimeter waves can make pathogens drug resistant.
Wow.
So we are essentially changing the entire environment around us and the ecosystem that we live in by adding these additional forms of radiation to our environment.
How do these levels of radiation compare with, you know, getting an X-ray?
Okay, well, an X-ray is a different form. It's along the electromagnetic spectrum, but it's in a much higher frequency, and it's what's considered ionizing radiation because it has the energy to actually create ions or ionize an atom or molecule, which essentially means it has enough energy within the wave to knock an electron out of its orbit. Radio frequency radiation and magnetic fields are not considered non-ionizing radiation, and which has been considered for many years to be innocuous because it doesn't have the capability of making these chemical changes directly. The problem is non-ionizing radiation can cause harmful effects through indirect mechanisms. There's a fair amount of research suggesting that radio frequency radiation can trigger the voltage-gated calcium channels in your cells, which causes an influx of calcium into the cells, leading to the development of free radicals, stress proteins, and sometimes DNA damage. We've got probably about 5 dozen studies showing evidence of DNA damage. One study, a review study, looking at what's called oxidative stress, the broader term for this sequence of events, looking at low-intensity radio frequency radiation. There was a review of 100 studies that were published in peer-reviewed journals, and the review found that 93 of these studies showed evidence of oxidative stress in terms of evidence of free radicals, stress proteins, or DNA damage. So we have a substantial amount of evidence of these indirect effects. And by the way, ionizing radiation, even though it can cause direct effects, changing molecules and causing DNA damage in your body, much of the harm that ionizing radiation does, according to the research, is through indirect mechanisms as well. But a large portion of the community of physicists seem to be oblivious to these indirect effects, These physicists tend to dismiss what essentially are probably now thousands of biologic studies that show effects from radio frequency radiation. I've been an advisor since 2015 for an international EMF scientist appeal, which calls for stronger regulations and warning the population about risks of non-ionizing radiation. Now it's signed by 240 scientists who have published more than 2,000 papers on electromagnetic fields in biology or health. So there's a large portion of the scientific community who have actually published peer-reviewed research on this topic who have been calling for stronger regulation of radio frequency radiation and extremely low-frequency fields, magnetic fields, which goes back for decades.
tell us about the FDA and the FCC's response to this scientific evidence.
Well, the one major study that our government has conducted, which was conducted by the National Toxicology Program, the final reports came out probably within the last month or 2 months now, was a study that the FDA called for in 1999, and for various reasons, the study didn't get launched initially for many years later, but after about 10 years of research in this $30 million study involving more than 3,000 rodents, the researchers found what's now considered as clear evidence of heart cancer and some evidence of brain cancer and tumors in the adrenal glands of male rats that had been exposed prenatally and for 2 years to cell phone radiation. This is our one major effort, this $30 million study, to determine whether cancer can be produced by cell phone radiation. And indeed, the experts who've reviewed this study, and this was reviewed by a panel of 15 experts, came to the conclusion that the answer is yes. Cell phone radiation can cause cancer in an animal model. This is not the first study, actually, to show this. There was an early Air Force study that found increased cancer rates in rats, and this study was dismissed. And recently, there was a study conducted by the Ramazzini Institute in Italy, similar to the National Toxicology Program study, which found using much lower exposures than the NTP, or National Toxicology Program study, found evidence of increased heart cancer and brain cancer in rats. The FDA is now trying to dismiss the utility of the study, saying, well, this was done on rats. There were some anomalies in the study. It was using an earlier form of cell phone radiation.
I have a quote from Jeffrey Shuren, Dr. Jeffrey Shuren, director of the FDA's Center for Devices and Radiological Health at the time. Quoting him as saying, these findings should not be applied to human cell phone usage, adding that we believe the existing safety limits for cell phones remain acceptable for protecting public health.
Yeah, I've been writing a response to that press release. It's completely disingenuous, the position of the FDA regarding this study. Basically, it's saying toxicology isn't important, which is ridiculous because the FDA relies on toxicologic studies all the time. Several years ago, I interviewed one of the scientists at the FDA who was supposedly their leading person on radiofrequency radiation, one of the few people there that had been following the research on this, and he seemed completely ignorant about the state of the research. Our interview turned out to be essentially my debating him for 2 hours, trying to show him that his understanding of the research was completely naive. And having been conducted science for over 40 years, I've never seen a perfect study. So that would essentially mean we can't rely on science at all if your expectation is to find a perfect study.
Right.
Obviously, when you study rats, you can't directly extrapolate to humans. And that's always the case. And that is what the position of the NTP was, that you have to take this into the context of the other research. But the FDA is using the NTP statement that you can't directly extrapolate by saying basically the study is worthless. So essentially what they're saying is the government wasted 19 years and $30 million of taxpayers' money for a study that was completely useless. And that's just an absurd position for the FDA to take. But our governmental agencies, by and large, on a daily basis, seem to be taking more and more absurd positions and seem to be completely neglecting public health and safety.
Well, in regard to, you know, cell phone safety and EMF safety, would you call the FCC and the FDA's reaction to all this research a conspiracy?
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I basically let others analyze conspiracies.
I don't think you have to be a conspiracy theorist to say, well, it appears that there's a significant lobbying action taking effect that is influencing government agencies to ignore public health and safety. Agencies that their job is to protect public health and safety, either willfully being ignorant, turning a blind eye, or rejecting scientific factual studies.
Yeah, on my website, saferemr.com, which I've been working on since 2013, I have a post from a career journalist who spent a year at Harvard analyzing the FCC's behavior over time. And he basically lays out, Norm Elster lays out the case in his monograph, how the FCC is basically just doing the bidding of industry. Early on, it was the broadcast industry. In more recent years, it's been the telecommunications industry and the wireless industry. Similar cases have been made against the FDA doing the bidding of the big pharma. That's been well documented. It would appear here, too, that the telecommunications industry has had a considerable amount of influence on the FDA and our other health agencies. By the way, the Environmental Protection Agency was doing state-of-the-art research in the 1990s on cell phone radiation, but when it came out recommending much stronger regulation of cell phone radiation than the FCC and the industry wanted at the time, the result was that the Congress cut off the funding for the Environmental Protection Agency to do this research. So virtually, at this point in time, there's essentially no expertise within our federal health agencies with regard to radio frequency radiation. All the experts have by now have retired from government. So our federal health agencies are basically flying blind, and to the extent that they rely on science, they're being advised by industry-funded scientists, people with conflicts of interest, who are basically protecting the industry by taking a very conservative position in interpreting the research and ignoring vast amounts of the research that has been conducted.
Well, that's one thing that deregulation isn't helping.
Absolutely not. Our government also, besides deregulating all these environmental measures that were set up to protect us, is benefiting greatly from the proliferation of telecommunications, wireless telecommunications.
How is that?
In a number of ways. For one, they've been selling more and more of the so-called bandwidth, the electromagnetic spectrum, to the telecommunications industry. Just one band alone, the 24 gigahertz band, which is currently being auctioned off to the industry. The government has already netted close to $600 million for that one band.
Wow.
In addition, federal and state governments have a variety of excise taxes and fees, which we pay through our cell phone bills.
Mm.
They're basically taking money off the top to pay for various programs. So this is a form of taxation on the American public that is being passed through the telecom industry. Telecom industry, you know, claims that they're going to invest several hundred million dollars in building out the infrastructure for 5G, for example. But who is actually going to pay for that? The consumer is.
Right.
So we're paying for all this technology. We're being experimented on by this industry, and we're not being provided informed consent.
Is there a way to use these devices safely, or is it just you're going to get an electromagnetic bath whether you're using a device or not?
There are ways to use it in somewhat safer manners, but one of the problems we have is that we don't know what constitutes a safe level of exposure or type of exposure. Our current regulations only control for the intensity of the exposure over a very short duration, and basically we're only designed to protect us from a heating effect, yet the research shows that there are many effects that are not due to heating, and they occur at very low levels. And in fact, some of the research suggests that the effects are not a function of the amount of dose in terms of the amount of energy, but are actually nonlinear in nature, such that very low exposures can open the blood-brain barrier, which can then enable any chemical toxins in your circulatory system to penetrate your brain tissue. And these types of effects disappear at higher level exposures. It's also the policies, the regulations don't control for the type of radiation very adequately. So a pulse signal, the research suggests that a pulse signal may have more biologic activity than a continuous signal. And with the newer technologies, the signals are very, very complex and may be interacting with our bodies in ways that had never been anticipated before. Plus, we're not only exposed to these electromagnetic fields, but we're also exposed to a variety of chemical toxins which may interact with each other. So we're living in this very toxic environment, and on a daily basis, it seems we're increasing the level of toxins we're being exposed to. Now, some of this is controllable. For example, you can choose not to use a cell phone or to use it in a fairly safe manner. Don't keep it on your body. Don't use it when the signal strength is weak, because the phone is programmed to put out up to 10,000 times more radiation when the signal is weak. Keep the phone away from your body, because the strength of the signal decreases substantially. The amount of radiation you're exposed increases substantially with distance from your body. So distance is your friend. Use it only in rare circumstances, and primarily use a wired or corded phone, a landline phone. Use a wired headset, not Bluetooth. There's a variety of things that the state of California is recommending to people who want to reduce their exposures. So these kinds of things are within your control. Don't keep your laptop on your lap. There's a variety of measures that could be taken with regard to personal device use. But increasingly, it's becoming harder and harder to avoid these exposures, because cell towers now are going up in neighborhoods all over the country, and people are organizing. In fact, I've heard from over 100 organizers from all parts of the country in the past year who are trying to fight the proliferation of these cell antennas.
Where does Bluetooth fall into that, into the danger zone?
Well, Bluetooth is a very low-intensity exposure, but the problem is, as I was saying earlier, that these low-intensity exposures have been known to open the blood-brain barrier in animal models. So we can't assume that Bluetooth is indeed safe at this point in time, from my reading of the literature.
What type of testing would you like to see?
I think we need a substantial amount of a variety of research, and it would take quite a while to go into all the types of research that needs to be done, but it needs to be done in a very systematic manner if we hope to determine what constitutes a safe level of exposure to what types of radiation. It's essentially, we've got policies that regulate, that are trying to regulate one particular type of output from these signals.
If you could influence public policy, if science wasn't just rejected out of hand, what type of testing would you like to see happen, before these devices were released to really, and they're just consumer devices. This is all about money, all about profit and sales. So it's not about health. So what type of testing would you like to see before these products are released to determine their safety, or at least how to use them more safely?
I think we need to convene a group of experts in toxicology and epidemiology, in radiation physics, to come up with some protocols that would enable us to determine what constitutes a safe level of exposure of a particular type of radiation. And I suspect what we're going to find is that the type of radiation, the modulation, the pulsing, all of this makes a difference, as well as the frequency and the intensity and duration of exposure. So this is going to be a complex endeavor. Hopefully we can come up with some simple models that can enable a fairly quick assessment of a variety of different types of radiation.
I know that when I drive around the outskirts and the new suburbs and new developments of Portland, the new housing developments, they are touting, you know, smart homes, you know, built-in Wi-Fi. You know, it's a smart home. It's going to, you know, technology. You'll be able to tell your oven to cook something while you're driving home or who knows what. What effect is that going to have on the children living in those homes?
Children and pregnant women are probably at greatest risk from these exposures. And yeah, we're talking now about not only smart homes, smart cities.
People are driving cars with Wi-Fi, and the kids have tablets in the back, and they can stream a movie while they're driving to keep them, you know, busy,
yeah,
watching movies and videos all the time.
Well, there's the deleterious effects of the exposure to the radiation involved, which we've talked about a fair amount. And
right,
what we haven't gone into is that there's building evidence that there are neurodevelopmental effects playing out in the forms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, reduced cognitive functions, effects on memory that we're seeing in adolescence. And then there are also the effects of this technology can be very addictive, particularly for young people.
Oh, particularly for all people.
Right.
mean, I'm raising my hand right now and saying, I'm pretty guilty of that myself. You know, there's a whole unrelated, well, maybe it is related, which is the blue light issue, you know, glasses that block the blue light from the devices when you're reading them that can affect your melatonin levels. And I understand that the EMFs can also affect that.
That's true, but yeah, the blue light is a particularly significant problem affecting melatonin levels, which affects sleep. And melatonin also is an important antioxidant for the body. The blue light and light, by the way, is an electromagnetic field, is a problem in and of itself, and there may be additional effects of other frequencies, of radio frequencies. There's increasing evidence, too, of these magnetic fields, extremely low-frequency fields, affecting the immune system. So virtually no system of the body is immune or unaffected by non-ionizing electromagnetic fields.
Do you use a cell phone, Joel?
Rarely. I have a flip phone that mostly resides in my briefcase and is hardly ever turned on.
One irony of what we're talking about right now is that my newest smartphone, my Samsung, actually has it offers a blue light filter, which, you know, I guess that's going to fall into the ironic category. It's offering me a feature to make it safer in one aspect while it's blasting me with radiation in the other aspects.
Which goes to show you that if the industry was motivated, they could probably come up with safer technology. But currently, the industry is in denial, as well as the government, the federal government, that there are any problems.
Would they be able to shield the phone and still make it operable?
Well, obviously not completely. So, but there are probably ways to make it a lot safer. Plus, if we encourage people to use landline phones more, not cordless phones, but actually wired phones, and not to, most of the bandwidth used by these phones is for watching videos. And why do people need to watch videos on their mobile phone all the time?
I don't
it's
know
a
why.
Huge energy consumption issue for
right.
our nation, as well as increasing our exposure immensely to radio frequency radiation.
So what are some simple steps that our listeners who are using their cell phones and smartphones, when they're not, I mean, if they turn off the, if they turn the cellular off and they put it in airplane mode or something, then they might miss phone calls. So how can they use their phones safely? I mean, getting a landline is going in the opposite direction that most most of humanity is going in, right? Because we're like, landline, well, what if I'm out and I need to communicate, you know, with my kids? You know, the cell phone has, it is a logistical miracle, but it's coming at a big price.
Yeah, there are ways, but yeah, I mean, most of the time you're either at home or at work or at school, you have access, potential access to a landline, but young people aren't even putting landlines in their homes.
Right.
So they're basically relying totally on a mobile device, which is really unnecessary. I mean, there are simple things you can do to reduce your exposures. Never carry the phone on your body.
Mm-hmm.
Turn off Wi-Fi or Bluetooth if you're not using them.
Right. Use a headset.
And airplane mode doesn't necessarily even turn those off on some phones.
Okay.
But if you don't use Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, never keep it turned off, because you're just wasting... you're wasting your battery life,
mm-hmm.
and you're exposing yourself to forms of radiation unnecessarily.
Using earbuds. Earbuds is a...
Wired earbuds, obviously. Keep mm-hmm. the phone away from your body
right.
when you're making a call.
Uh-huh.
So there are these simple things you can do to reduce your exposure. It isn't necessarily going to make you completely safe, but
right.
The best wisdom is to reduce your exposure as much as possible. When you go outside, though, and are exposed to all these cell towers, and or in a public situation or on public transit, you're at the mercy of other people, unfortunately. A transit system or a train or whatever, and
right.
or a bus, and everyone's using their cell phone.
Everyone is
you're
using their cell phone.
To huge levels of secondhand radiation.
Okay.
So it's very much like secondhand smoke. I think eventually we will, as a society, regulate secondhand exposures. And so you will see more and more policies preventing cell phone use in certain facilities.
You know, this just sounds so much like tobacco. It sounds like the only way to make progress is with, you know, public information and educational campaigns to slowly, because that's what happened with tobacco over decades. But really, initially, it was pretty fast. Like that, the first 10 years of public education, I think, saw tremendous reductions in tobacco use. You know, a lot of people had family members have cancer due to smoking, so a lot of people had firsthand experience. And so then public information campaigns reinforced that to more and more people, to then the entire public attitude had to kind of shift, you know, that 100th monkey syndrome against tobacco in order for people to be motivated to change their behaviors.
Yeah, unfortunately, that shift took more than a half a decade, half a century, rather.
Right.
Half a decade. And still, tobacco is a huge problem in our society and many other societies.
Mm-hmm.
Nicotine addiction seems to be an even bigger problem, because basically what we're doing with young people today and many smokers is shifting them to another form of nicotine addiction, which
right.
may not have the same environmental effects, but may have extremely bad individual effects
right.
for those who consume these e-cigarettes.
Joel Moskowitz, thank you so much for being with us today on The Digital Divide.
Well, thank you for having me today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the John Craigie Keep It Warm Tour on Friday and Saturday, December 13th and 14th at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. John Craigie is an American singer-songwriter. His music and performance style has been compared to John Prine and Mitch Hedberg, with influence of Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie. The Keep It Warm Tour will feature stories and songs and will partially benefit Food Lifeline. Again, that's the John Craigie Keep It Warm Tour on Friday and Saturday, December 13th and 14th at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
My time's swell. Road seems lonely. Road seems lonely. My life seems great.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Songs from the Moon on Saturday, December 14th, at the Nalu Kava Bar in Portland. Songs from the Moon is the record release party for future soul artist Heather Christie and is also a benefit for the Women's Earth Alliance benefit. The event also features performances by Nima Lightseed and Water Eye. Again, that's Songs from the Moon on Saturday, December 14th at the Nalu Kava Bar, 722 North Sumner Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Your purpose on earth is to be inspiring.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, Hood River and the Gorge at 91.9 FM, Philomath and Corvallis at 104.3 FM, and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
I hate a song that makes you think that you're not any good. I hate a song that makes you think you're just born to lose, bound to lose, no good to nobody, no good for nothing. Because you're either too old or too young or too fat or too thin or too ugly or too this or too that. Songs that run you down or songs that poke fun at you on account of your bad luck or your hard traveling. I am out to fight those kind of songs to my very last breath of air and my last drop of blood. I'm out to sing songs that'll prove to you that this is your world and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
Hi, this is Don Jacobson in a pre-recorded version of Moving On, so the station can do some maintenance in the air room. I'm going to kick off with a set of Kate Wolf.
He had a way, not wanting to say any more than he thought would be heard. And the long years of living, day to day giving, had carved out a map on his face. With little to lose, he'd learn how to choose, and his choices were easy to trace. He had the eyes of a painter, heart of a maker of songs. His words fell like rain on the dry desert plain, precious and so quickly gone. From a long line of teachers, white Baptist preachers, he was born with an Indian will. His quiet dark eyes read in the light as he rode in the low Osage hills. His school was the prairie, sage, the wild berry, the quail, the wide open sky. The cottonwood thicket by the slow rolling river, red bud in the hot cattle drive. Had the eyes of a painter, heart of a maker of songs. His words fell like rain on the dry desert plain, precious and so quickly gone. There were days filled with thinking, nights with a drinking, for a lost love that raged like a storm. But how his eyes smiled when he talked to a child, rough hands gentle and warm. And his strong arms were brown, where the long sleeves rolled down on his faded blue cotton shirt. When times got hard, he'd go out in the yard and he'd cuss away some of his hurt. He had the eyes of a painter, heart of a maker of songs. His words fell like rain on the dry desert plain, precious and so quickly gone. Now the garden's grown dusty, and axe lies rusty, the door's banging hard in the wind.
store is closed down, like most of the town. It won't be open again. His big white car sits out in the yard of the house he built solid and true. But I see his eyes burning tonight like the stars in the sky he once knew. Had the eyes of a painter, heart of a maker of songs. His words fell like rain on the dry desert plain, precious and so quickly gone. His words fell like rain on the dry desert plain, precious and so quickly gone.
Thank you. Thank you. Gosh, let me thank you very much. All right. Let me look around at you and see who's here. Gosh, a lot of people I sort of know, and some I don't, and some I will.
Every night we light the candle that stands beside our bed. And sometimes the flame's too much to handle. That's what you said. That's what you said. You should know. Because you built a fire in me and you made it burn. You followed me, watching every move, matching every turn. Your green eyes, they don't miss a thing. They hold me like the sun. Patient as that love light in your eyes. You never threw away a word or ever talked in a disguise. I ought to know. You were a beacon to a sailor lost at sea. I saw it in your eyes when you looked at me so openly. And your green eyes, they don't miss a thing. They hold me like the sun going down, warm me like a fire. Inside and tumble out to me. My heart knew it had found what it was after, and it came so easily. We should know. After all the years of the hard and lonely time,
go by like best friends' storylines, yours and mine. And your green eyes, they don't miss a thing. They hold me like the sun going down and warm me like a fire in the night without a sound. Without a sound.